Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Bob Hunt and Jose Barreto continue their SMB series for Windows Server 2012, and in today's episode, they chat about deployment scenarios and ways in which you can implement all the new features in SMB 3.0. Tune in as they dive deep into various deployment strategies for SMB. Bob, the mic is yours.
So welcome to TechNet Radio. My name is Bob Hunt. I'm an IT Pro Evangelist at Microsoft. This is a TechNet Radio series that we're going to talk about some of the features of Windows Server 2012. The best way to get information about Windows Server 2012 is to follow my blog, which is www.bobhunt.net, or to follow me on Twitter, which is at BobH, B-O-B-H-M-S. So with me today, I have my good friend Jose Barreto from the Windows product team. I'll let Jose introduce himself.
Hi there. So Jose Barreto here, one more webcast talking about file servers, and that's my group at Microsoft. I worked in the Windows Server 2012 product and focused on some of these file server configurations, specifically the ones that involve Hyper-V and file server at the same time. So I guess we're going to talk a little bit of deployment options there.
Absolutely, yes. So what we have planned for today is that Jose and I have been doing a series of webcasts covering a lot of the different features that have come with the SMB3 feature set of Windows Server 2012. And one of the things that we thought would make a lot of sense to talk about is that we've kind of talked about the features. Now it starts to make a little bit more sense to get into some of the customer deployment scenarios, the way that customers might want to roll out a lot of these features that we've talked about. So what we have here is we've got essentially a series of slides where we're talking about a couple implementation scenarios of this, essentially starting out talking about, you know, a straightforward implementation, you know, of a standalone implementation of essentially SMB3 with a couple Hyper-V hosts. So do you want to start to talk through this initial slide here, Jose?
Sure. So this first one, we call this the all standalone or all non-clustered. And the idea here is you may be experimenting with the feature and you said, oh, I got a few Hyper-V hosts that I can do some testing on. I get a file server and the file server has a few, let's say, some SATA drives in it. And you just want to set something up. You're not too concerned with fault tolerance. You just want to play with the feature. So this setup has two, could be more Hyper-V hosts connected to a file server, and the file server has four disks. Maybe you're booting from one and the other three are data disks. You can create shares on it. And for this one, you kind of have the basics, right? So you have virtualization, you have some storage, and you can do, you can experiment with migration. You can experiment with the ability to maybe shut down a VM in one node and then copy some data from one VM to another on the share environment and then start up another VM on the other host. So you have all the file-based goodness in terms of flexibility, in terms of ease of use and all that. And you can start experimenting. So that's probably the most basic Hyper-V over SMB configuration you can get out there.
Excellent. Yeah, so I guess this deployment scenario here on this slide would probably be relevant for a lab environment like you mentioned. Or, you know, maybe a small business that isn't really have the expertise per se to do some of the high availability that we're going to talk about in the next few slides. Would that be a fair statement?
It would be, although I would recommend, if you have this hardware, I would recommend that you go to the next one. And let me show what is the change there. So I think there's something that's built into Windows now, which is our fault tolerance in the storage layer through storage spaces, that even if you're in an environment that's very simple, with the same hardware, you could implement this solution with storage spaces, so you have at least disk fault tolerance. Right, so in this next one, this is the number two, we just introduced Spaces, which is a software option in Windows Server 2012, and now the disks are not a single point of failure, right? So in the previous one, it would be just someone that's, you know, oh, I don't know about storage spaces yet. I want to first experiment with the basics, but I would quickly recommend that you at least deploy storage spaces to get at least some level of fault tolerance to the disk there.
That's great. No, that's a good point. So this would kind of be version 1.1, if you will, of the implementation. Right after you've enabled the features, this would be the first thing that you'd probably turn on if you had this hardware to give you this additional fault tolerance and really give you a level of resiliency that you wouldn't have. Now, there's no additional licensing or essentially these are just features that you're turning on inside of Windows Server, correct?
Exactly. So this is just basically creating a pool from the disk that you have. So even with SATA disks, local disks, you can do that. There's no problem. As you mentioned, this capability is present in every version of Windows Server. In fact, storage space is even present in the client if you wanted to do that. So no big challenge there. Multiple ways to configure it. You can use Server Manager. You can use PowerShell. And once you have that, you can continue to do Hyper-V over SMB using those now fault-tolerant disks that you create with Spaces.
Right. Okay, good. All right, so as we start to talk about some of the more fault-tolerant solutions, the first thing that jumps out at me here is, you know, hey, we've got, you know, a couple Hyper-V hosts here, right? We've already got virtualization. We've got two pieces of hardware, and we're really not providing, and those hosts themselves are not really highly available. So, you know, kind of the next step that you're talking about here is, clustering Hyper-V.
Yeah, but we do have a certain level of fault tolerance here. So if you think about it, right, if you have a machine, so let's say you have this VHD over here running on this machine, and for some reason, let's say you have a power supply issue on this and you lose this host, right? So what you want to have is you want to use this host over here to pick up the slack and run this VM. So in this configuration, without clustering, this needs to be done manually, right? So you as an administrator are going to say, oh, that machine failed, but the data is on the file server. So I have a way to bring it back. So essentially what I have to do, I have to manually go to the surviving host, and I have to import that configuration that's sitting on a file share, and I can bring that Hyper-V VM back up. But that's a manual step. So what you want to do is go to our next slide, which essentially shows a failover set of Hyper-V hosts. So with that configuration, what happens is if what I described previously happened on this environment, so if I pull the plug on one of my Hyper-V hosts there, then what I described previously will automatically happen. So that's what failover clustering gives you. It gives you the ability to detect the failure of a host, and then look at what was running on that host and automatically bring it up on a surviving host, right? So now you have two things you can tolerate the failure of. One is, of course, the disk, which is still fault tolerant in this setup. We're kind of evolving it, right? The other thing is that if you lose any of your Hyper-V hosts, assuming you have a surviving node that can pick up the slack, then you don't have to be there. This could happen at night, and you're sleeping, you're enjoying your time off, and Hyper-V essentially failover cluster combined with Hyper-V will detect that situation and automatically recover. Of course, at that point, you probably want to take action, right? You probably want to go fix whatever broke, so you go back to that configuration.
That's very helpful. No, that's good. So essentially, from a failover clustering scenario, you know, what are the you know, just real quick steps are the that a customer would go through to turn on, you know, clustering if they've got the hardware. Essentially, they've got the two Hyper-V hosts. With, is it a complicated set of steps that you know, a small or medium business would have to go through to turn these things on, or is it relatively simple to do that?
Well, that's one of the beauties of this, right? So in the old days, before we had this capability, you would have to set up either an iSCSI SAN or a fiber channel SAN to enable clustering for the Hyper-V host, because you needed some sort of shared storage. That included configurations like, you know, setting up an iSCSI target or setting up a fiber channel SAN and then doing all the required LUN configuration and all that. In this new release, with this setup, essentially what you have to do is you have to go install the failover clustering feature on both hosts, and then you say, I want to create a cluster. Right, and that is essentially what it takes. It's the only two things you have to specify here is what are the nodes that you have, and if you want to have just two, if you have three nodes, that's it. You specify the three nodes, and it creates the cluster, and that's it. If you have only two nodes, you actually have to put the file server as a witness. So in case someone goes out, they can establish, oh, that guy failed, so I'm surviving. You need a third vote. We call that the file server witness, which is also very simple to set up. But there's no additional hardware. Again, if you had the hardware you had before, with two or three machines talking to the file server, you essentially have all the ability to bring this together. And these days, all you need is Windows Server. The standard edition of Windows Server has the failover clustering capability. So it's fairly straightforward, and there's no SAN or LUN to configure. You can do this all with just file shares.
That's great. I know in the past, you know, it was a tall order to cluster, you know, file servers or cluster other applications on top of Windows Server. So it is indeed much simpler nowadays to turn on this high availability.
Yeah, we have the PowerShell. The PowerShell to do this is simply, you know, new cluster, name of the cluster, list of nodes. That's it. It's actually a fairly short line to make it happen, and we of course have wizards to go do it in failover cluster manager. The usual recommendation to run failover cluster validation does apply, because there are some requirements here. So you have to have, for instance, networking properly configured between the two machines, and you have to have the two machines with the same version of the OS. So we provide the tool to validate the configuration, just to make sure that the machines you're trying to cluster don't have any issues and that all the requirements are being met. But it's fairly straightforward. There's PowerShell for that too.
That's great. So I guess the next, you know, logical thing would kind of be to talk about, instead of just clustering the Hyper-V hosts, you know, what about, you know, clustering, you know, file servers, right, if you had maybe another piece of hardware available to you?
Yeah, the main problem with this configuration that we're looking at here is that the file server box is a single point of failure, right? So let's say you have one server being your file server, and for some reason, you know, you have a problem with the memory there, or just you need to apply a patch that requires a restart. So you would have to stop all your VMs in order to restart that box, or to take downtime of the machine if you want to install more memory or something. So that's why we introduced the next one. Let me talk about the next one. I essentially introduced the notion of having a file server cluster. Now, at this point, we do have an extra hardware requirement, right? Because what we are trying to do here is have two file servers where either file server can fail, and the surviving file server will pick up the workload, and nothing will be happening on the Hyper-V side. So the goal here is that you could essentially have, let's say, for instance, you have a failure on this file server, and then everything that you were doing here moves over to this file server, but these Hyper-V hosts, they essentially do not see any interruption of service, right? Now, in order to make this happen, the two file servers have to have some shared storage. Now, the goal here is to use inexpensive industry standard equipment. So what I'm positioning here now as a new piece of hardware you need is this JBOD, where I have a set of disks, and these disks are essentially SAS disks that are attached to both servers. So you need each server to have a SAS HBA, that's what we call them, right? And then you have to connect them to this shared JBOD. So this is a box. If you're thinking rack-mounted servers, right, you could have 2 1-U servers, and typically the smallest JBODs are 2Us. Some bigger ones that can fit more drives are 2Us. And then you basically wire both file servers to the same set of disks in the JBOD. And with that, you can create a cluster between these two file servers. Now, with the new capability, so we talked about before in, about scale-out file server clusters, right? So the idea here is these two file server clusters, they actually behave as a unit. It has a single name, you can create a single share, and both file servers can be using that same set of disks, that same set of shares are exposed on both of them. Obviously, in this case, you're investing a little bit more in your infrastructure. You could have not only a couple of hosts running Hyper-V, as I'm showing here, but you probably are looking at the ability to use, say, 8, 16, 30 Hyper-V hosts connected to this cluster. And it all comes down to, as we mentioned before, networking between these machines, and in most cases, how many disks you put in that JBOD, right? Because you have to just watch for your bottlenecks, and maybe in the future we should, in another webcast, kind of talk about performance bottlenecks and all that. But for now, I'm just looking at the functionality, right? So you now no longer have the file server as a single point of failure.
Right. Now, this is great. And this is a, you know, as we're kind of on, we've kind of crossed them. I'm looking at the, you know, the set of six slides that we're talking about here. And it's like kind of like the first three that we have here is kind of like where it's like, okay, yeah, it's a, I'm dipping my toe in the water. I'm going ankle deep, you know, knee deep. You know, maybe it's a small and medium business scenario. But once we start to hit this fourth slide, where now we're adding in some type of external JBOD storage with SAS, and you're talking HBAs, and you're talking clustered file servers. And I'm assuming, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, having both clustered next, right? We're going to talk about having the Hyper-V hosts clustered and the file servers clustered. We're talking about, you know, a different investment in infrastructure that's, you know,
let's go there and look at what it would look like, right? So, as you described, all clustered, right? So, this is a production deployment. This, you would have no problem taking this and deploying a large number of Hyper-V hosts, talking to that file server, file service cluster, and Hyper-V is also clustered. So now you're talking, this is a private cloud, right? So this is you hosting a few hundred, maybe even a few thousand Hyper-V VMs hosted on a few dozen Hyper-V hosts, and typically just a couple of file servers will do. And at that point, you probably don't have only one JBOD. You could have a couple of JBODs as well. One of the things that we do, right, so instead of having just one here, imagine if you will, if you had another JBOD next to it with a few more disks. And what you can do also is in the spaces, you have the ability to say, be resilient to the failure of an entire enclosure. So if you have two JBODs, you can actually configure the spaces as mirrored spaces that are enclosure aware, so that you can effectively even lose an entire JBOD in your configuration is fault tolerant to that. So every single piece of equipment here can fail and you can survive.
So it's mirroring it or almost striping it across two separate pieces of hardware, storage hardware.
Exactly. It's mirroring, it's this mirrored space across enclosures, right? And it's really simple in the end. You only have to say, when you create the space, you say that it's enclosure aware, and spaces knows. There is a something called SCSI enclosure services that allows you to identify an enclosure and even the slots where the disks are positioned. So if a disk is failed, you can say, oh, blink this disk, and it will actually blink the disk so you know which one to replace. So if there's a failure, right? And all this happening without downtime because we have redundancy in the system, right? So all these things are fairly straightforward. I just the other day I was looking at the first set of JBODs that have gotten the certification so that you can buy them with confidence that all these capabilities will be enabled and available to you. But as we're saying, this is a full, complete set of capabilities, right? So the Hyper-V hosts are in a cluster, the file servers are in a cluster, and in this case, with the addition of a second JBOD that I put there on the pen, it, even the enclosures are fault tolerant. So of course, the disks are as well.
So a typical enterprise customer would have, you know, a larger Hyper-V host cluster. They'd have a larger essentially set of you know, file server clusters and so on, and this would just be you know, essentially one of the workloads they had across their enterprise. But as we're kind of working up the stack here, you know, this would certainly be a way, you know, from a deployment standpoint, how to get to that enterprise scenario, right? If you were starting to deploy this, you know, shortly after viewing our video here, this would be a, you know, essentially also a logical, you know, set of progressions, if you will, to essentially roll out this this implementation.
Yeah, and most people will think of this as deployment units, right? So some people call these stamps, some people call them containers, not maybe in the sense of a storage, like a transport container, but a set of machines that you identify as your minimum deployment unit. Most people think of these as racks. So what you can think of is, imagine a rack where you have two JBODs at the bottom, two file servers, and then you stack them up with maybe you can maybe fit 16, 20 Hyper-V hosts in that rack, and then a couple of views at the top of the rack for networking, some redundant switching. And this essentially becomes your private cloud unit of deployment. Right, and with that in mind, you can pretty much start thinking, okay, if I want to scale that further, probably what you want to do is to have multiple of these units. Instead of trying to say, oh, I'll get a bigger file server cluster or a bigger Hyper-V cluster, you can maybe have two racks, each with its own storage, each with its own set of VMs, and you can have 2, 3, 4, 10 side by side. And when you're talking enterprise and private cloud, that's typically what people start thinking, right? And from a management perspective, because this is all going over file, you could migrate between racks, you could migrate the storage from one rack to the other, you could have a Hyper-V host on one rack talking to storage on the other rack, at least temporarily as you balance resources around. So that's the whole idea as you go bigger, right? So you're saying, oh, I have this set up and I want to grow it bigger. You could certainly do something like that. And that's what some of our customers say. You're talking about a hoster or you're talking about a larger enterprise that want to deploy a private cloud solution. That's one of the things you could do. The only real thing that I highlight here as something that this configuration is not ideal is that some people might still have trouble with configuring the JBOD and attaching the SAS cables to this setup, right? So not everyone is familiar with that kind of wiring, and most people are comfortable with wiring networking cables, like regular Ethernet cables and all that, but there's a piece of this that is, you need the SAS HBA, you need the JBOD of a certain type, you need to have the cables connected, you know, to both sides. So there's the one improvement that we have on our last slide here, which is the cluster in a box. Have you heard of the cluster in a box setup?
Absolutely, but it seems like they've come back, right? I mean, these were big, several years ago, and they kind of went away because of the. It was really a limitation on the hardware side of things, right? Where you had essentially, you know, two servers attached to, you know, essentially a baby, SCSI attached set of disks, and essentially, you know, a lot of times they only had a single backplane or something like that, and they were oftentimes multiple points of failure inside of the cluster in a box. But I'm guessing that has, or I know for a fact that has evolved. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So these are essentially we're talking about changing the way that you buy these boxes, right? So if you're in a situation, let's say, where you want to have some storage for this rack that you're setting up, and you want to order that configuration today, before this cluster in a box solution was available, you would have to essentially know, I need a let's say 2 1U servers, I need a couple of JBODs, and they have to be SAS JBODs, and I need to also order the ESM controller in the back of the JBOD, so I need a couple of those, and I need to buy 2 SAS HBAs per file server, and then I need to wire 1 SAS HBA to 1 JBOD, and then to the other JBOD, and do kind of a mesh of connections so that both file servers are connected to both JBODs, and there's redundancy there. And then you have to go configure storage spaces, create the pools. Then you have to, of course, you had to install the file server and create the cluster and all that. So what's fun about this is we're working with our OEM partners, and you can essentially find these boxes now where they come as a single unit, but inside of them, all the SAS connectivity is already taken care of for you. These boxes, they come always in at least a pair so that you have the redundancy built in, right? And what you need to do is they come pre-installed with Windows Server 2012, and some might even have the pools already pre-configured for you, so you don't have to worry about those. And the idea is you get this, and you essentially join the domain that you have, and you can start creating shares and storing your VMs on it. So the idea here is everything we talked about before, but in a package that comes pre-configured. There's different form factors. The most common one is the one where we have essentially like a little blade system that you have 2 server blades and storage. That's what some of these look like. So we, during TechEd, we saw a number of vendors introducing these systems and different configurations, different size of disks, different number of disks, but very much simplified.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I've personally been talking about these coming for a while in all the events that I've done over the last year or so, talking about private cloud deployment scenarios where our OEM partners have the ability to essentially buy, you know, a private cloud, right? It's one thing for you to build it yourself. It's something else to get it from a hoster, but this is kind of shortcutting the thing, right? So this is almost like a recipe shortcut, if you will, right? You know you're going to build a private cloud. You've decided to do it on-premise rather than, you know, essentially in somebody else's, data center, hoster, or otherwise. But this is essentially minimizing the amount of work that, that your IT pros have to do to get these essential components up and running.
Exactly. And this cluster in a box. In this setup that I'm showing here, since I'm focusing here on the file server configurations, the cluster in a box in this slide plays the role of the fault-tolerant, continuously available file server that is serving a set of Hyper-V hosts. So I'm showing two typically would have at least a dozen or more Hyper-V hosts connected to this cluster in the box. But you can also imagine, and I wanted to kind of show, if you had only this bottom portion here of the setup. So if you have only the cluster in a box, that is a perfectly fine set of hardware to deploy, say, a branch Hyper-V deployment, right? So this going beyond this, what you could do is instead of doing the file server here, you have a Hyper-V box here, and you have two Hyper-V box in a cluster. So obviously, this is a smaller configuration, but a perfectly valid one for, say, a branch. So you have a few VMs that you're running here, and then you have just the spaces configuration, and you run storage spaces and Hyper-V on both nodes, and it's still a cluster, right? It's still fault tolerant. Granted, you're not going to be able to have a large number of VMs here because you have only two hosts, and you want to be able to survive the failure of one. So you should have enough resources on the surviving nodes to run all your VMs. But this is a perfectly fine configuration that you could have. So that's another use of a cluster in a box. It doesn't really have to be just about creating file servers for a Hyper-V over SMB configuration. It could essentially also be creating a simple, small business setup or a branch setup for Hyper-V by itself in a cluster in a box. So these are all interesting new scenarios that we have now for these simplified configurations.
That's fantastic. So before we wrap up, let me just take one other configuration question here. So stepping away from the cluster in a box scenario for a moment, as an enterprise wants to roll this out and essentially has a significant need to have a highly performant environment for their file servers, for hosting their VMs, in this configuration, what are some of the additional performance things that they could look at in a deployment scenario to essentially maximize performance of this configuration?
Yeah, there's a number of different ones. We're kind of focusing on the basics here, but we have shown in some of our TechEd presentations our deployments where we go scale out on the file server. So right now you're looking at a two-node file server cluster. We have support for up to eight-node file server clusters. And in that case, you could support a much larger number of users, a much larger number of open files at the same time. And in that case, the typical setup is you have a back-end SAN. So let's say, for instance, you want to do this with, say, 2,000 disks. We can't really wire all that up with just JBODs. To reach 2,000 disks, it's quite a lot of disks, and to wire that to all nodes gets more complex. So at that point, you switch over to a fiber channel backend, and what you can do, let's imagine, for instance, you have a high-end SAN with a few thousand spindles, let's say 2,000 spindles, and then you use fiber channel between the SAN and the set of eight file servers, and they all share that storage, and you create that higher-end scale-out file server front-ending or becoming a gateway to your SAN. Now, many people ask, why would you not wire everyone up to the SAN? Why have this file server in the middle? And the idea here is essentially that if you have this high-end configuration of thousands of spindles, you will have hundreds of Hyper-V hosts that need access to that storage. Then the proposition of wiring hundreds of Hyper-V hosts, each with two fiber channel HBAs and a very large number of fiber channel ports required for this deployment, You can simplify it by wiring just your 8 file server nodes to the Fibre Channel fabric, and then you have an Ethernet fabric going out. And again, the other thing that we could do is use RDMA, so these high-end network interfaces, to wire between the file servers or from the file server to the Hyper-V host for a high-performance solution. So even with 10 gig Ethernet, 40 gig Ethernet, or InfiniBand, you can have these high-speed connectivity options between your Hyper-V host and your file server. So if you can imagine, right, you can have a couple of clusters of Hyper-V hosts, say 100 Hyper-V hosts connected to these in two sets, right, to, they say, two clusters of 50 Hyper-V hosts each, connected to these 8 file servers in a cluster that's a gateway to your SAN. So you could definitely start thinking about enterprise-focused deployments like that. We're kind of restricting in the slide here to a more straightforward configuration, up to a rack size configuration, but you could go bigger.
That's fantastic. No, that's a great step from a deployment standpoint to understand how we can kind of continue to kind of go up the chain from what we've talked about here on the slides to what a global enterprise might have need for in this scenario.
And one other thing is, we're focusing on the Hyper-V configuration. You could imagine this being used for, say, a database setup, like it could be SQL on the upper side here, a set of SQL servers sharing this storage. And it could be the classic file server scenarios as well. I mean, if you have a large enterprise, you have 100,000 users accessing file servers, so you would definitely need high-end file services available to you. Continuous availability is also important for those scenarios. So there are other deployment scenarios. I just think that the Hyper-V over SMB, with all this focus that we have on private cloud, seems like what a lot of people are talking about.
Yep, indeed. That's fantastic. All right, well, I think we've done a good job of covering a bunch of these deployment scenarios for today. So I think what we'll do is we will, wrap up this session today. What I'll do is, remind everyone the best place to continue to educate yourselves on Microsoft, Windows Server 2012 is to hit my blog, follow me on Twitter. My blog is www.bobhunt.net or at BobHMS. What's your information, Jose?
Yeah, so you can find my blog posts at http://smb3.info. That's SMB, the number 3, dot info. And I have a number of blog posts, so some of the PowerShell that we talked about here, some of the diagrams that we're showing are available there. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Jose Barreto.
Fantastic. All right. Well, this concludes today's session of on deployment scenarios for SMB3. And this is very much appreciate everyone for viewing. And we look forward to seeing you next time on another episode of TechNet Radio.